believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome to the show, everyone. Bill Carnes, 2A Radio. Glad to have you here. It is Monday, the 8th of June, 2009. And I wanted to talk a little bit about something that went down in Kirkwood, Washington, where there were some armed bad guys that in the Walmart parking lot on the 2nd, just about a week ago, basically did a shoot 'em up with the armed guards in a robbery attempt. Now, not so much the case that I'm here to talk about, but I've had some communication with some folks about really Walmart's response, if there'll be any, when it comes to one of the things that they oftentimes do. Oftentimes, Walmart will take a single incident, and what they will do is they will create policy across the board when it comes to something that happened at one store. For instance, a lot of gun owners or gun enthusiasts don't like Walmart's policies when it comes to buying a gun, which is interesting. I bought a shotgun once at Walmart, and the thing was is you buy the shotgun, that's your last purchase, because they're going to escort you to the door. They hold the shotgun. This is after all the paperwork, money's been exchanged, everything. Then they hand you the gun after you've left the doors of the store so that you can go on and put the thing in the car and leave, or just put it in the car and come back and get other stuff. But you're done, at least for that moment, at the store. And the rationale for that is evidently somebody went in there, someone's estranged husband went in there, purchased a shotgun, purchased some ammo, loaded the gun, and went gunning for his estranged wife. So that's as they claim. I don't know how true that story is, but that's what I heard from a couple different Walmart employees. But I'll tell you this, I live in a town, in a state, which is an open carry state, and the town I live in is highly open carry. And I go into the Walmart packing my 1911 or my Glock or whatever it is, open on my hip on a regular basis. And the only thing I've ever heard about it when it comes to the employees was I had a lady who's a supervisor that, you know, has seen me in there many times. That's a smaller town. She came up to me one time. She goes, I only had three people tell me, you know, there's a guy walking around in here with a gun on his hip. And I chuckled. I said, so what did you tell him? She goes, I told him that's perfectly legal, and we see you in here and others armed on a regular basis. So I thanked her for that. I thought that was a nice way of going about it. I have had a lot of people look at me and say, are you a cop? Are you a cop? No. No. They just look, are you a cop? So then that's my response. No, are you? No, but you're carrying a gun. Yeah, and why aren't you? I really, when people say, well, why do you carry a gun? My common response is, well, the question isn't why am I carrying a gun? The question is, why aren't you? Are you looking to be a victim? Are you, you know, hey, I'm some martial arts master. I want to see if it really works when I'm not expecting something. No, no, that's not it at all. You want to be armed, you want to be safe. And sometimes I go into the whole thing. Sometimes I just leave them there questioned and puzzled. You can tell, though, by the look on their face whether they're going to be able to digest the information or not. I actually walked in wearing my instructor uniform once, and I had a teenage girl who was bagging groceries. I was there picking up some food for dinner and after work, and she looked at me, she goes, oh, my God, you've got a gun. My God, look at that, I did. How did it get there? Anyhow, a couple of funny stories on that. Stay tuned through the break. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot me.
All right, everybody, welcome back. There's a fellow by the name of Dave Workman who writes for the Seattle Gun Rights Examiner. And I find Dave's writing and work to be very good. There's some really good writers out there. There's some very conscientious writers that have a depth of knowledge, some intellect to it. I find Dave Workman to be one of those few. Good guy. He put out an article I guess about a week ago, called Shoot to Wound Advocates Have Watched Too Much Television. And he goes into some cases, and in this case, there was he's up in the Seattle area. Seattle is in King County. He was talking about a man in Covington, Washington, who was shot by a King County sheriff's deputy who was a designated marksman. Some of you might call him a sharpshooter. Some might call him a sniper. Designated marksman is really what the label goes. But he shot a man in Covington who had a hunting rifle who was about to take a shot at the police helicopter. Not often is a shot to a helicopter going to do much damage. You'd have to get really lucky. But provided you get that luck, you could kill somebody in the chopper. You could take the chopper out and kill everybody on it and everybody on the ground that they slam into. So this designated marksman took the shot, shot the guy in the chest, and he died. The whole thing was over. The guy that was shot was killed. He didn't make it. So, of course, somebody gets in there and sends a kind of an insane post on the Seattle Post-Intelligencer's public feedback section that says that sharpshooters should have shot to wound. Now, here's the deal. If somebody comes and punches you in the face three times, would you react by kicking them in the shin once? Is that the proper reaction? Or let's say that they come up there and they stab you in the chest. Is your reaction to take your finger and poke them in the chest? What we're talking about is disparity of force. When bad guys have guns, we have to roll under the idea that when they raise that gun up and they're getting ready to press the trigger, they raise the gun up, they've got it pointed in at someone, and if it's someone, another human being, or something containing human beings, be it a vehicle or a helicopter, something like that, you've got a role that they're using deadly force or about to use deadly force. Because you don't, when it comes to human beings and guns, when human beings shoot at other human beings, it is a potentially very deadly confrontation. So you've got to work under that. The idea of shoot to wound is just coming from absolutely ignorant people. It's like people that say, you know, this whole thing with Obama and stimulus money and putting money into GM isn't socialism. It's trying to save the American economy. Now, that's as ignorant as can be. It is socialism. That's all there is to it. Wrapped up in the ideals of fascism. That's what it is. You don't believe me? Look up those definitions online, fascism and socialism. So when someone brings up their gun and they're about to fire, you've got to operate under the guise that they can kill whoever it is they're shooting at. They have a deadly weapon in their hand. There is nothing to dissuade anyone from realizing that a gun is a deadly weapon. I would imagine in gun control advocates' minds, if a bad guy has a gun, and a good guy has a gun, and the good guy might be a civilian, might be a cop, whatever. Good guys, bad guys, they're separate. But bad guy has a gun, and he brings his gun up as though he's going to shoot another good guy, and he gets shot by a good guy and dies. I could only imagine that gun control advocates, because they're generally bleeding heart liberals as well, generally, would look at that and say, well, you could have shot to wound. Why would I try to go out of my way to wound somebody when the idea is to shoot them in the center of the chest? That's the largest area. It's what pumps the blood. It's what incapacitates people. Let's say, what do you do? Oh, shoot them in the leg. Okay, well, last time I checked, the leg didn't have any direct effect on the use of a trigger finger. It just there weren't these automated synapters in the body that once you shoot somebody in the leg, the trigger finger automatically stops working, like acupuncture with a bullet. I also don't understand this whole, just shoot the gun out of their hand. That is the single most ignorant thing there's ever been. That's a trick shot sort of thing behind the camera. The only time I ever saw the gun shot out of someone's hand intentionally was a guy back in the Midwest. I think this may have even been in Kansas City, where there was a guy that he was just kind of holding his neighborhood hostage by being out there with a gun. Police show up, SWAT rolls out. They all fan out, take their positions of cover. The bad guy decides to sit in a chair. He's hunched forward. His legs are spread apart. He's got his gun dangling low below his thighs, looking down. So the designated marksman, the sharpshooter, the sniper, whatever you want to call him, is told, you know, if you can, shoot the gun. So he's 70, 80 yards away. Really easy shot for the equipment that he had, the training that he had. And he ends up shooting the gun straight out of this guy's hand because he was a sniper with time on a stationary, non-moving, very predictable target. So all of the perfect factors for doing something like that happened to come in. So when somebody, if I ever talk about a shooting, somebody says, well, why didn't the guy just shoot the gun out of his hand? Okay, well, why don't you learn about what it is you're talking about before you open your ignorant mouth, is my thought. I don't necessarily say that. I guess knowing me, I could see myself saying that to somebody if they are truly that dumb. However, just to have people believe that you can shoot to wound, you can select exactly where the bullet's going to go in a armed lethal encounter, that is not so. Maybe, if you are a designated marksman at a reasonable distance with excellent equipment, excellent training, and a stationary, predictable target, you can then select your shots much more so than any other armed situation. So I have to congratulate Dave Workman, again, from the Seattle Gun Rights Examiner, on an excellent article. He really brings it out in how people that watch too much television or people who are ignorant about guns that may possibly get into some discussion actually will talk about this. I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story. Over the weekend, we ended up adopting a dog. And long story short, took the dog to the vet yesterday. They happen to be open 7 days a week. Took the dog to the vet yesterday, gave her a once-over, which wasn't necessarily that good of news. However, when we were done, they were talking about bringing the dog back in to see another doctor this morning. Said, well, I've got the radio show. Said, oh, really? What's your radio show on? Second Amendment, da-da-da. And right then and there, I could tell that the lady behind the counter was not pro-gun. I wouldn't so much say she was anti-gun, but kind of like scooted back a little bit, turned her head to the side, started looking at me like kind of out of the corner of her eye a little bit, still trying to be polite and mask all of the physical reactions, along the lines of, are you some crazy gun nut? So there's the perception of gun owners. If there's the perception right there of gun owners, of people who are not gun owners that simply don't understand. So I've got to kind of capitalize on this whole thing. She, and I don't know if she would or not, but very well may be of the mindset of the person who wrote in about, well, couldn't he shot to wound or shoot the gun out of the hand or some other nonsense like that. Absolute nonsense. Shoot to wound. What you're doing is you're shooting for the largest area you've got, which is the upper chest area. Some people say center of mass. Your mass is between your throat and your crotch. The center of that is below your chest. It's right in the center of your sternum. I'm sorry, not your sternum. Right in your solar plexus, a little south of your solar plexus, just north of your belly button. That is not a good place to shoot. Center of mass is not the place to direct bullets. That is too low. You want to place bullets into the rib cage because the rib cage happens to outline the entire area of where the entire hydraulic system of the human body is. The hydraulic system being the heart, the lungs, the major blood vessels. The only thing outside of the rib cage, which ends up being a decent shot, is the liver. Because the liver and the pancreas are the only two organs in the human body that do not expand and contract. Once they expand, they stay expanded. So a shot to the liver is most often a lethal hit. However, it's not always available to hit. It's on one side of the body. You're not always going to have it visible. And it's also more of a precision shot. So shots to the chest area. And if you have to go through an arm because someone's standing sideways, that's fine. Handgun round should do that. Remember, it's a dynamic environment. That arm's probably going to be out of the way by the time the bullets get there anyhow. If not, what's wrong with the shot to the arm as you're laying in a couple more into the chest? Nothing. So forget about this shoot to wound. Shoot them in the hand. Shoot them in the leg. Okay? You're shooting into the chest. The general consensus is 2 to 3 rounds into the chest is kind of the general consensus for reasonable use of force to stop somebody with a handgun, 2 to 3 rounds into the chest. If you go with buckshot, double-odd buck, or triple-odd buck, 1 shot. You go with the rifle, 1 to 2 shots, depending on the caliber of the rifle, the action of it, and such as that. You get a semi-auto, smaller caliber like a .223/556, a couple of shots is fine. That's general consensus. All right, more on this subject when we return. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
So when people ask me about home defense and things such as that, one of the things I recommend to them, if they don't already have one, is get a good dog. Well, I decided, it's time to take my own advice. So not having to be a pretentious sort of person, has to go get a full blood, spend a couple of grand on it kind of a dog. I've had dogs like that before, but I don't see that that's necessary. A good dog is on the inside. It's not necessarily what's on the outside of what a piece of paper says. So we go looking for a dog, look around for a couple of days. There happens to be a place in town that specializes in the adoption, the care and adoption of older dogs, mature dogs. And go down there, take a look at this place. Went down there, had an old bag of dog food that was sitting in the garage. We're going to get a dog, didn't work out, had the bag of dog food, been sitting in the garage for a few months. Ended up taking the bag of dog food down to them, giving it away. End up seeing a dog. Now, I got to tell you, one dog I am particularly not a big fan of, traditionally, never have been, probably never really will be, is a pit bull. Now, I know they get bad press. I've had a lot of experience around dogs, especially when I was a cop and also through friends of mine. And I've met some nice pits, and I've met some that are a little bit odd. And I've met some that, hey, you know, this dog was great, and I don't know what it was. All of a sudden, something happened, and they snapped. Now, I believe inside that there is something inside of every pit bull that could make them snap. Some of it, it's merely being conscious, and they're snapping already. Others may go their entire life and you never find it. That's just my 2 cents worth. Well, as it turns out, my girlfriend is a big fan of pit bulls. I am not. We've had this discussion many, many times. So we end up seeing this female pit that she's a little older, maybe about 5 years old, and has the use of only 3 legs. She has her left rear leg doesn't work. She can move it around, but she doesn't walk on it. There's an issue with the leg. And if you look at her from behind, you can see that the muscle is just entirely deflated. There's no muscle tone on that side on the leg. It hasn't been used in years. So we find out this dog's been there for 2 years. She's sweet. She was a little bit chewed up because they had another female pit that was in there with her for a while. The other female pit attacked her. She wasn't doing that good. Then as she's healing from that, some jackass kids go throwing some firecrackers around all these dogs about a week or 10 days ago. She tries climbing under the chain link fence, gets her head all scratched up. It was a sad story. However, all the dogs, they're outdoors. It's a nice place. They'll have a lot of room. So they do their very, very best with what they've got. And they rely on donations to handle this. They've got, I don't know, maybe 56, 57, maybe 60-ish dogs. So we end up adopting this dog, take her home, get her cleaned up. Beautiful dog. Sweet as the day is long. I don't even know. We've had her for 3 days now. Don't even know what she sounds like when she barks. Hasn't barked yet. Incredible hearing, incredible sense of smell, and very alert, and just sweet. Actually, within the first 35, 40 minutes of having her at the house, she rolled over on her back so we could pet her belly, which is a sign of submission and trust. And she gives kisses. You know, I'm not a big fan of ever putting my face anywhere near a dog's face. She put hers in mine and, you know, started with the kisses and everything. Just a wonderful dog. Ended up naming her Cassidy, as in Hopalong Cassidy, because she's only got the use of three legs. Take her to the vet and have them give her the once-over. Need some stuff done with her teeth. X-rayed her leg. And it turns out her knee had an injury from years ago, at least 3 years. And she's only 5, maybe 6 years old. At least 3 years old on this injury, possibly 4. The previous owner that ended up taking her to the shelter a couple years ago never did anything about. And it has now morphed into just this total loss of bone density around the bones inside where the knee joint is. To the point where if you were to look at a piece of coral and compare it to the X-ray, that's what it looks like. So now my girlfriend's all over, you know, well, let's see if, you know, what it would take to see if we can get it fixed. I'm thinking it's probably going to be bone or joint replacement surgery on an adopted dog. I don't know. She makes, you know, a good living. She can certainly afford to put this into the dog. I'm like, all right, well, the dog's lived at least half her life, if not the majority of her life, without the use of the leg. It would be nice to get it working. But $2,000 or $3,000 into doing that, I can't afford that sort of thing. Come on. I mean, let's be reasonable here. So anyhow, more to come when we find it. We're gonna go meet the orthopedic surgical vet today. He wasn't in yesterday. We're gonna go meet with him today, see what happens with the dog. If anybody's interested, I'll spew it out on the air. She seems like a great dog, Cassidy. Hopalong Cassidy. Good dog. Okay, we're going to go into a little thing here. I'm going to start it here, then we're coming up on the break in about another minute or so, so we'll continue on. In Kentucky, Reverend James Tennyson of the Justice Resource Center and the New Bethel Church in Valley Station. I'm sorry. No, that was a different guy. New Bethel Church in Valley Station, Pastor Ken Pagano. He's actually inviting his parishioners to come in on June 27th with their guns. You may have heard of this. You know, if you believe in the Second Amendment, bring your guns in. Sounds pretty good on the surface. However, there's a couple of issues with it. And we're going to get into these issues. And we're going to talk probably about the way, in my opinion, as a professional with guns, I mean, an honest to God, I do something, somebody pays me to do it, and that happens on a continuous basis. By definition, that is a professional. I am a professional firearms instructor. I've done it for years. I'm familiar with all the major weapon systems that are out there. Coming from my little beat, I'm going to give you a better idea on how to do this. We're going to talk about how they're going to go about it. Stay tuned. More to come on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Karnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Get up, it's a riot, riot.
2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, there is no riot of the day today. I didn't find anything that so infuriated me. I just love that song, the way it was put together. So that was for my entertainment. I hope you were entertained as well. Okay, so at this church in Kentucky, we've got the pastor at the New Bethel Church in Valley Station, the pastor Ken Pagano. He's having on the 27th of June the Bring Your Guns to Church event. Now, here's the issue. He's having them bring their guns to church in an unloaded configuration. The gun has to be unloaded and in a secured holster. There's going to be an off-duty cop who's going to be there checking all the guns and all the holsters, but the off-duty cop will be armed. What's that telling everyone? Bring your gun to work. You know, bring your moderate club, your expensive, kind of insufficient club to church day. Because that's all an unloaded gun is. It is a rather mediocre and rather expensive club when it's not owned. And they're going to talk about Second Amendment rights and gun safety, but yet they're not going to have any bullets in the gun. That's fine if a couple of things go down, as if this is, okay, this is the start. This is the starter. We're going to have a gun safety day. So church is going to be held right here in church, and we're going to talk about gun safety, wear your empty guns. Next time we do this in a month or two, whenever, we're going to do the next gun safety day. And church is going to be held at the range. And then we're going to learn how to do some of this stuff. Then the third time, maybe another couple of months down the road, whenever it is, we're going to have church out at the range again. And we're going to get even more proficient with the guns. And we're going to start to solidify this 3-4 times out at the range. Then next time we have Bring Guns to Church Day, everybody gets to bring a loaded gun. But to have everybody just do this a one-time deal and your guns have to be unloaded, I read somewhere where they talked about, you know, waving the guns around because they can, because they got their guns. Now, I hope, I just hope so much that that was the interpretation of a misinformed news article writer who wrote that. I would absolutely, absolutely hope that there is no way the pastor, who is a self-proclaimed gun safety instructor, firearm safety instructor, he would ever have parishioners bring their guns out and, like, display them up in the air. I would hope he doesn't do that. Again, I hope that was the writer who wrote that. Most of the time when you see an article that's written, if somebody doesn't have a vested interest in it and have some inside knowledge as to what's going on, oftentimes you don't get all the story in there. You just don't. So hopefully that was a mistaken thing that was put into this article that I read. If the pastor's doing that, that's nuts. That's absolutely irresponsible, stupid, something you should never do. I mean, rule one, treat all guns as if they're loaded. Would you take a loaded gun and just wave it around the air and hoop and holler? I mean, that's insane. Hopefully that does not happen. But to deliver the story, okay, everybody that's willing, you know, come on out here, bring your guns. Or maybe even say, okay, here's the deal. If you want to bring your guns to this event, going to be a couple of precursors. You got to own a gun. And before we want you to come into church with the gun, we're going to do a couple of things, you know, this night, and this night. Everybody wants to bring the guns. You're going to have to come to, you know, a couple hours here, a couple hours here, a couple hours here. And then on the 27th, you can bring your guns in loaded. If you don't make it to these events, then don't bring your gun loaded to church that day. But if you're going to have the event, have the event. What is a group of armed people good for if they are commanded by whoever their authority figure is, in this case would be the pastor, tells them, bring the guns all you want, but they've got to be unloaded. Well, that's like saying, you know what? You're welcome to bring your coffee mug. Come on in. It's got to be empty, though. Right? Or, yeah, you can bring that McDonald's bag on board this flight. You don't have to buy our food. The bag's got to be empty. But you can bring the McDonald's bag with you. How about that? You know, it's just, it's stupid. It's short-sighted. It's really ignorant. It's really, really, really short-sighted. Dave Champion spoke about this on the air, And I didn't catch that particular program. However, the day that he did that show, Dave and I went out, we caught a movie, caught up on some stuff. Dave, he really is a great guy, very personal dude. And we're talking about this, and he says, you know, when we have different authoritarian figures that are pro-gun, but even they, through their own rules, require people to unload their gun and walk around with an unloaded gun, that defeats the purpose. And quite honestly, that's a good point for anti-gunners to go after. A case in point. Most of the firearms training facilities that you will go to, not all, but most of them, when you're not on the range actually shooting, they'll have you unload before you leave the range. Front sight is certainly one of them. Now, this might be an effect of Naish Piazza. It might be an effect of Naish Piazza's insurance company. But there's certainly a lot of people out there, especially when you very first take a course. I mean, there should be some provisions in there. You're not going to go loading up your first time out there. Sometimes not even your second, unless you're really tuned up. But the return students that have been out there a lot, fully capable of being armed. And case in point, a number of the students who have been out there for a long time, then they get new staff members who have been on the job for a month, 2, 3 months. Quite honestly, the students who've been out there for a long time, been out there for years, taking all kinds of courses, are much more capable with a firearm than the people who are on staff. Now, keep in mind, the people who are on staff should be good educators. They don't necessarily have to be the very best shot, because the other staff members that have been out at Frontside a long time, their job is to teach people how to shoot. So they can certainly bring other, newer, less experienced staff members who are good at teaching. They can certainly teach them how to be a good shot, you know, which is that's a decent way of going about it. When I used to run the instructor development courses out there, I got to tell you, we used to get people out there that had these massively wonderful resumes of how good of a shooter they were. I mean, just how wonderful of a shot, which could care less, really. I mean, if you could, I can teach people how to shoot. I don't really care if you can shoot. I want to know if you can teach and you can articulate and you can get along with people. I want to know that you can get along with the staff. We had a case in point. We actually had a female rangemaster out there at one point in time, the first female to actually become a rangemaster. There have been some since. But she just was a disorganized mess when it came to being able to socialize with the majority of the staff. Some of the staff liked her. A lot of the staff didn't. And then, you know, the last year or so that she was there, all she did was really create hate and discontent. So would get along fine with the students, but then within the staff there was turmoil. So as it turns out, there was a separation involved. She ended up leaving on her own accord. And it wasn't just exclusively to her. There's been other staff members. There's been a couple of male staff members that just don't get along with the rest of the staff. Anyhow, point being, you don't have to be that great of a shot to be able to shoot. I'm sorry, to be able to teach. There's really three levels of people as I see it. There are those who can shoot well. Then of the people who can shoot well, some of them have the ability to teach others how to shoot well. Not much. Not many. Just because you're a good shooter doesn't mean that you have the ability to teach someone else to shoot well. And in fact, you can be a moderate shooter and teach someone to shoot better than you. And then there's the third level. There is the echelon level. Those who are decent shooters that can teach other people how to shoot and also have the rare quality of being able to take other decent shooters and teach them how to teach others to shoot. So you got good shooters, you got people who are good teachers and good shooters, and you got people who are able to teach teachers to get other people to shoot. It's one of the categories I fall in. I know maybe about a dozen people who are really good at me. I don't even, a dozen is stretching it. Maybe 8 people who are really good at that. Not only can they teach, they can teach others to teach on getting people up to speed, students up to speed on shooting guns. So some rare qualities out there. But just realize, just because someone's a good shot doesn't mean they're going to be able to teach you how to be a good shot. I remember in the police academy, we're standing up on the line the very first day on the range. And it used to be Wednesday was range day. I understand that this particular police department, Las Vegas Metro, does it differently. I think they send you out to the range for like a week of pistol training and a week of shotgun and rifle training, and that's it. You don't do like a progressive working weekly, you know, building your thing anymore. But that's the way it was when I was there. Wednesday was range day. Spent half the day on the range shooting, and you spent half the day doing defensive tactics. They split the group up, the academy up into two different groups. These two squads did one. These two squads did the other. They had lunch, then they switched. So, point me. First time on the range. Up there, the range master, who rarely came down from his lofty perch. He was this old codger, civilian employee. He comes down and, you know, he gets to me. I'm like maybe the eighth or ninth guy in line. And he says, what's your experience in shooting? I said, sir, I just graduated top of my class at Gunsight, and I have worked at a gun range in the past. And he looks at me and goes, oh, so you are going to show me how to shoot. Sir, I'm just here to do the best that I can at whatever you ask, sir. Best answer I could come up with on the moment. He said, fine. So he starts having me deliver rounds. We ended up shooting a box of ammo, 50 rounds. Every single round that I fired, and some of them were coming from the holster, you know, with a little bit of time in there. The first few were just bullseye. All 10 ring and bullseye X-ray in the center, you know, towards the center of the 10 ring, every single round. And everybody's like, geez, Carnes, you know, what's up with you? Do you sleep with that thing under your pillow? Well, where it's located at night is really none of your business, A. And B, I decided if I'm going to have a job where I have to carry a gun, and the gun is not for sporting or target use, it's for if I need to shoot another human being, I think I ought to learn how to use it before accepting the offer to the job. How about you guys? How many of you have never shot? Well, I've never shot before. I had a little bit in the Air Force, but you know, whatever it was. It's like, wow. Well, I actually spent money and a week of my life learning at Gunsight the basics of how to do this. So maybe that's why I'm a little bit more tuned up. I looked at this job a little more seriously than the rest of you, perhaps. You would think if you were hired to be an interpreter from, I don't know, say Japanese to English, you'd probably know a little bit more about the Japanese language before you accepted the job. Well, cops who work the street carry guns, and every now and again, a cop carrying a gun working on the street is forced into a situation where they have to shoot someone. So it'd probably be a pretty good idea to learn how to run your gun and hit the target and know a little bit about tactics rather than accepting a job that might include that you have no idea what's going on. I just didn't understand that mindset. Okay, back onto this whole thing where we have organizations that are promoting guns, but they require the people that have the guns to be unloaded. Now, what good is an unloaded gun? Well, not much. Now, I had an email come in from one of the listeners, and it was about 3 weeks ago. I forget, I don't have it up in front of me. I forget exactly who it came from. I'm sure you're listening. And by the way, we had a couple of kind of some jovial banter back and forth about it. And he says, you know, he asks, when I carry, do I carry with a round in the chamber? He says, the reason I ask is a friend of mine carries all the time, but he does not carry with a round in the chamber because he says he'll be able to run the slide really quickly, obviously carrying a semi-auto, in order to get the gun out and shoot because that's the way he trains. He trains bringing the gun up, running the action, and then shooting. All right. My answer to this is, if I carry a gun, it is not loaded until there's a round in the chamber. I don't care what some municipality or state says on the law books. I'm telling you that if you bring the gun up, disengage any potential mechanical safeties, and press the trigger, and it doesn't go bang because there's nothing there to go bang, then the gun isn't loaded. That's the way I look at a loaded gun. So I load my gun, round in the chamber, magazine in there that's got plenty of ammo in it. Then it goes in the holster. Now I'm ready to go. Then I can bring the gun up. If it's a 1911, disengage the safety, press the trigger, bang. If you are under the belief that you can run the action and then get a shot off, you don't know what you're talking about. And when I say that to people, they say, well, you know, that's the way the Israelis do it. That's the way the U.S. military does it. You're right. That is the way they do it. Because they don't trust those groups. The government that these people work for don't trust them in carrying around in the chamber. It's a military thing. Reason being, military firearms training for the average soldier, the average airman, well, I wouldn't say the average Marine, because the Marines get a little bit better. The average, seaman with the Navy, they just don't get good gun training. Reason is, the people that are training them don't know what they're doing. And there's generation after generation after generation of that. Marine Corps puts a little bit more into it. However, still, they don't carry around in the chamber. There are negligent discharges throughout these organizations, throughout the military, because they don't have very good training. It's not really dedicated into them. So if a bad guy comes and attacks you and they're physically on you, you're having to fight them off with one hand to bring the gun out with the other, how are you going to chamber that round? Well, I'd go off the holster or off the back of my boot. Well, theoretically, that's wonderful. But wouldn't it be nice if you're fighting this person off, you've got one arm out there, you're doing your best to get them away so you can bring the gun up and shoot. If the gun would actually, you wouldn't need to manipulate it at all, it would be faster to bring it up and go bang. Because I got to tell you, if you plan on the gun being in the holster to the gun being out, and you being able to get a shot off in just over a second, running the action and then getting the shot off, all of this included, running the action included in this 1 second, you're not going to have time to work the sights or properly work the trigger to get it off. If you don't have to run the action, you can bring the gun up, get your second hand on there if available, use your sights and trigger, and within that second or so, get a decent shot off with a decent hit. If you think you're going to be running the action when someone's attacking you, you might be on your back, you cannot get that slide to the rear to chamber the round that's coming out of the top of the magazine, you are in fantasy land of the gunfights. Don't do that. Train to a higher standard. Stick around through the break.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. Those of you who are racing fans in NASCAR know who Richard Childress is. Richard Childress owns race teams. He was the guy that the late Dale Earnhardt drove for. Richard Childress was recently elected to the NRA's board of directors. Now, 4 million people happen to belong to the NRA. Their board of directors include the following: Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, Carl Malone, Ted Nugent, and Tom Selleck, as well as Richard Childress. What I see on here is there's a number of celebrities on this board of directors, which is, okay, it's great to have a couple celebrities, a couple of big names associated to the NRA to try to, I guess, drive membership or say, oh, yeah, some of the celebrities are up there. I like that guy. Heck, maybe I'll join. That's great. But what do they really do? I mean, a board of directors is supposed to, in this sort of organization, help decide what the direction of the organization goes. And I want to know if these guys actually have the ability to do that. If they do, it's great. If not, all we've got is a bunch of publicists out there. Now, I dig Ted Nugent. I dig Ted a lot, and I like what he does. I like how he never, ever backs off what he says or how he says it. He doesn't go to this PC garbage platform. The only reason I stay PC is there's some things that I cannot say on Republic Broadcasting Network, some things I cannot say over the airways. Otherwise, PC is out the window. I have to choose my words more carefully in this format. Ted does not, because other people have to bleep him. He can say as he feels. Tom Selleck, another good guy who's up there. But again, do these guys really know the best interests of the National Rifle Association and how to guide it? That's my question. Because I see that the National Rifle Association, quite honestly, doesn't really go in the right direction. They don't go with the personal self-defense enough. They go with the hunting and sporting use of firearms a lot. Now, they've gotten on board a little bit more when it comes to self-defense in the wake of Heller. But up to that point, they never push it. And that's what the Second Amendment is all about. It's not about hunting or sporting uses of firearms. It's about self-defense, and it's about quelling tyranny if the government gets that way. I should say, once the government has gotten that way. That's really what I should be saying. So I'm just a little bit questioned over these guys. Now, Richard Childress, he has a very successful and huge race team. Something tells me he's probably qualified to be there. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, no idea. Karl Malone, basketball player, no idea. Ted Nugent, he's got a lot of business that he does. He's probably pretty qualified. Tom Selleck, no idea. I like all of these guys. I really do. But I don't know if they're qualified to be on the board. I just don't. And if others believe that they are qualified to be on the board because of their name, I'm sorry, it needs to be a little deeper than that. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Load up, stay in condition yellow, be safe, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Enjoy your freedoms. The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.